Hello and welcome to the Leadership Learned podcast, brought to you by the Inspirational Development Group. Each episode, we examine the behaviours, skills and attributes required to improve human performance through effective leadership. We discuss the latest thinking and issues affecting leadership from the classroom to the boardroom, to provide tangible insights as we go beyond the clichés, to prove that leaders are made, not born. Welcome to the Leadership Learned podcast, and today I'm joined by Nigel Girling, and we're going to be talking about the cost of bad management and focusing on the UK, but a lot of what we're going to be talking about is something that affects organisations globally as well. The Chartered Management Institute has commissioned a report from YouGov to do a nationwide study of UK management and the effects of good and bad management. Now, I want to Nigel, if you could start us off by sort of telling us a bit about the report and some of the highlights that you found therein.
Yes, this could get ugly quite quickly. this whole topic is very dear to my heart. But first, it's probably worth mentioning for those that don't know, the Chartered Management Institute is the professional body for management and leadership in the UK, but also has an influential role across the world in shaping standards of management and leadership. One of the things, there are a number of things that come out of this, and very few of them are a surprise to those that have been watching and involved in this for a long time. But like the fact that 82% of managers who ended up in a management role had no intention of doing so and were accidental. And that, for me, there's one thing right there that is a basis of this. We don't get it as a nation. We don't get why management leadership is a thing. We see it often as a rank, a status, an area of jurisdiction, a kind of level of authority, all this kind of stuff. And it should be none of those things. The challenge we have is that in order to get paid more than a basic wage in a UK organization, you probably have to take on some management responsibilities. So what people actually want is to earn more money and have a better life. Management, just the thing they get lumbered with as a consequence. And for, 82% of them, it wasn't the bit they wanted. Lots of sectors have wrestled with this for years. For example, in education, a part of my former life, if you were a teacher, you could only reach a certain ceiling. It was bands of pay. And once you reach the top of the top band, that's your lot. The only way you could progress beyond that was to become a team leader or a manager or a curriculum leader. So what we do is, it's madness in many ways. We say, right, so you're really good at that. Let's make sure you don't do that anymore. You're far too good at that. Let's stop you doing it and give you a load of stuff that you're rubbish at to do instead. And by the way, we're not going to train you in how to do it or support you in doing it, but we are going to give you a hard time if you don't do it very well. So that first thing, 82% of managers ending up as a manager by accident.
That's the phrase they're using, the accidental manager. And it is, you're right. We seem to think of it as an award rather than a role.
Exactly.
He's done really well. We'll make him a manager.
I mean, I think it's probably even worse for female managers who kind of end up being acceptable in certain jobs in organizations and not in others sometimes, because we have this weird, outdated stereotype of what people should be able to do. I had just a couple of weeks ago, I had a senior leader from an organization say to me that they avoid appointing women to senior positions because they're not hard enough.
Wow.
Firstly, he's an idiot and a dinosaur. Secondly, why do you need to be hard in order to be a leader and manager? Yeah. We want the ones that are supportive and encouraging and empowering and developmental and all those kinds of things. It's not about being tough so you can sit and bang a table. That's the way people did it 50 years ago. A lot of them are still doing it like that. It's insane. So, accidental managers is exactly it. And this is something that Chartered Management Institute have been focused on for a few years now, that the UK is largely run by people who had no intention of being a manager and haven't been taught how to do it. And another statistic that came out of this, 52% of managers had no management and leadership qualification. That's misleading, because it's actually much worse than that.
Is it?
Yeah, because quite a lot of the ones who are ticking the box to say they have a management and leadership qualification have a business degree.
Right.
Or an MBA.
Yeah.
you know, something which is, you know, an MBA is a very comprehensive program and a very well designed program, but it's not about management and leadership.
No.
It's about finance and marketing largely, and operations. It's about organizational effectiveness. And whilst that's related in some way, it's not the point with thing we're talking about here.
Yeah.
You know, so actually, it's a lot worse than that. Quite a number of people who say they've got a management qualification, what they mean is they did some supervisor training 25 years ago, but now they're the operations director or something else. And the training that they had is firstly outdated and irrelevant, and second, nothing to do with the job that they actually have.
Mm-hmm.
So my estimate, and it is only that, would be that we're talking more like 15% at the tops of managers who actually have a relevant qualification in how to be a manager and leader.
And that's a specific training element where they're taught how to deal with people, how to get the most out of people and teams, etc.
Yeah, all the things that, what people laughably refer to as the soft skills.
Yeah.
They're not soft at all. Any silly so-and-so can add stuff up, you know, or read a spreadsheet and go, oh, look, that's worse than it was last month. Anybody can do that. That's not hard. That's easy. Mm. The hard stuff is empowering and developing and motivating people and inspiring them to want to do better and encouraging innovation and creating a non-toxic environment where people actually want to be there. All the things that the hard stuff makes worse.
So it says in the report that the UK is the only G7 country where GDP is lower, is still lower than it was before COVID.
Mm.
So what evidence is there that this productivity gap is attributed to poor management?
The early studies, there was a lot of research done. I was involved in some of it. The research identified that something like 25 to 30% of people were engaged in the UK.
Wow.
In their work. So, to put it the other way, you know, 70 to 75% of people weren't.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you want to find...
therefore not at their highest productivity.
Absolutely, and not innovative and not committed and not creating a good environment and not being a supportive team member. You know, things we talk about at IDG about being an effective follower is essential to leadership, because if you're not an effective follower, the leader's got no chance.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever he or she is, they're not going to be able to make it happen unless the followers want to follow and support and challenge in the right ways. So yeah, we know that the smoking gun is probably engagement. It's the thing that a lack of destroys productivity and effectiveness. And in COVID, you know, the kind of hybrid working things gives people a taste that work doesn't have to be all consuming, burn you out and throw you on the scrap heap. It doesn't have to be like that. And maybe if we get better at managing that, at managing organizations that work that way, maybe we can get some of that productivity back.
Mm-hmm.
But the government has long believed in the UK that the productivity gap stems from lack of engagement, and that lack of engagement stems from poor management leadership.
And it says in the report that the workers who rate their manager as ineffective are significantly more likely to be planning to leave the organization.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Sim, I did a study a few years ago now about why do people leave an organization? And the overwhelmingly biggest group was because they couldn't stand their manager. Even if they liked their job and they liked the organization, if they couldn't stand their line manager, that's what shapes their day. If your line manager is an idiot or a bully or both, or a tyrant or a narcissist, if your leader exhibits no care for you and no encouragement to you, you're going to abdicate. You might stay, but if you do stay, you won't be doing good work. It'll be presenteeism, you know. So yeah, managers shape how people feel about their job and how their day pans out. And it's still true even in a remote and hybrid world. You still see that. People will view their manager as being a cause of how they feel. If they feel stressed, it's probably something to do with their manager. If they feel threatened, it's probably something to do with their manager. You know, if they feel there are unrealistic expectations, those are probably coming from their manager. So there's a kind of a very direct straight line between the way the manager and leader performs and behaves and the way people feel about the job and the work in the organization. So it's no surprise if people who think they have an ineffective line manager feel like leaving.
So why do you think we're in this situation, and why particularly in the UK?
We still seem to see management and leadership hierarchy as related to the class system.
Okay.
Yeah. You look at government, you look at major organizations, and as you move up in the ranks, you move into an increasing percentage of people from wealthy, middle class, upper middle class, privately educated types of organizations. And we sort of therefore seem to have a view at the top that the ordinary people, whatever they are, can only reach a certain level.
Mm.
It's not a glass ceiling. It's more of a kind of an old school tie ceiling or something, and they exist there. And so we seem to see it as a social skill, is my point, rather than a set of professional skills. Another one of the things that came out of this report was that a large proportion of people felt that your relationships and your social profile had a far greater bearing on whether you were promotable than your ability or performance. And we see that in organizations. We see it in Westminster. You know, we see at the time that the people arrive in positions of extreme power and influence based on things that are nothing to do with whether they're any good at that or not.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're not going to be any good at it, but that's not why they were chosen. You know, it's no surprise if some of them turn out not to be very good at it.
They're just very good at a popularity contest.
Well, yeah, and they're very good at knowing the right people and having good connections and a good network and a good profile and a good relationship with others. That's not the only reason that people get there, and it's not the only reason that people who don't get there don't get there, but it's a factor. We still seem not to be able to get our heads around the idea of people with caring responsibilities. For example, that was another thing that came out of here, that 31% of people who were surveyed here felt that anyone with a caring responsibility was less likely to get promoted. Well, what that really means is a lot of the time is that we're removing particularly women, if they're the primary carer in the family, from professional jobs. In one of our previous podcasts, we talked about the whole impact of the menopause, which hits women at just the point they're likely to get into senior management level positions. And there are so many things about the way organizations are designed to disadvantage people from lower socially economic backgrounds, people with caring responsibilities, and people who are not connected in the right way to the right sort of people.
Why is it that we think that, going back to what you were saying about managers need to be hard, why is it that we've got that belief, those beliefs? Why is it that that's entrenched in UK businesses? You know, the whole command and control thing, and when you do start talking about softer skills and thinking about how people feel, you know, people begin to think, well, that's not relevant.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, I guess if I knew the real answer to that, I'd be doing something else for a living and making far more money, I guess. But it's interesting, isn't it, to consider. Some of it maybe is historical. I mean, we do have a lot of issues in the UK that some other countries don't have because we've been doing it longer than most. Yeah, we had an industrial revolution long time before a lot of other nations did. And we came from a primarily sort of agricultural and manufacturing world where the work was hard, the people were tough, it was working men's clubs, and it was, you know, going down mines, and it was working in press shops, and it was that kind of stuff. And that developed a kind of, I think, an ethos that you had to be tough to be able to cope with these people. But we don't have that economy anymore. Our economy is almost entirely service-based. A lot of it's technological, arts, fashion, design, all those kinds of things. All things that you would think would not require any of that, but they still seem to want it in a lot of cases. So we learned to believe that in order to be successful, you had to be dynamic and tough and hard and demanding and have very high expectations of people. And there is a small amount, enough of an amount of truth in that for it to persist, I think. Yes, you do need high expectations, but you need to provide high support for people to achieve them. We haven't quite got that bit right yet. We think I think this, the hard soft thing is very important. Hard is strong, soft is weak.
Yeah,
that's how the language works for us. So for somebody to be hard, that means they're strong. So therefore, that's a positive thing. If somebody is soft and caring, we see those things as weak and as nothing to do with work.
And I wonder if, and stop me if I'm getting too philosophical here, but I wonder if there's a an element of the patriarchy here as well, in that
sure.
was the way that men were supposed to be, and men were in control of everything. Whereas now men don't realize they don't have to be like that. And they're not in control as much as they used to be. And therefore that's gone into our businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are in a kind of a transitional phase now, aren't we, where the genders are balancing out, the roles and responsibilities.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, it's slow and slow and slow, but it's you can see the evidence of it starting to happen. Men are having caring responsibilities. Men are being responsible as parents more than they ever were. Still not as much as women, I guess, but much more than they used to be. You're right. The patriarchy is at the root of a lot of this. And particularly the whole kind of alpha male paradigm.
Yeah.
You look at the way organizations are structured. It's structured in a model that suits the alpha male.
Mm.
Yeah, it's hierarchical. It's command and control. It's driven by money. It's driven by numbers. It's driven by the tough people rising to the top. Inverted commas, weak ones falling by the wayside or being sidelined. Yes, it's that model is not everywhere now. It was everywhere when I started work. It's not now, because I started working about the 18th century. So it was very different then, but it is still there far more than it should be. And it's there in many places. It is needed. It's just become the default. I think that's a lot of it. A lot of this stuff is about defaults. It's the default structure for organizations is in a hierarchy. Yeah, there are loads that aren't in that anymore, but the majority still are like that. And we still pay people according to their place on that hierarchy. And if you want to double your income, you've got to jump up two steps.
Mm.
Any way of doing it, unless you happen to be in a performance related job, and there aren't that many of those. But yeah, as a proportion of the majority. So yeah, it's a paradigm that we've kind of come to believe is just how things work.
Yeah.
Shifting that is tough.
Yeah.
I spent 11 years nearly in the government task force, in the Guru Group. I'm not convinced we shifted the dial very much.
Really?
We talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
We had lots of events, but we ended up singing to the choir most of the time, because the people who came to the events were the ones that got it. You know, the organizations that already understood. The ones who thought it was all nonsense weren't going to come to the events because they thought it was all nonsense. So, yeah, it's a tough one, because we've seemed to. I look at this report and I think that could have been written 30 years ago. I suspect a lot of the findings would have been pretty similar. Yeah, it's a tough nut to crack. The starter for me and the point of this report, really, is that we can't do anything about it unless we do something about it.
Yeah.
And maybe the starting point for that is recognizing that management and leadership is a profession. We call it one, but we don't treat it as one. If you want to be a dentist, you're not allowed to do it unless you're qualified and trained.
Yeah.
If you want to be a pilot, you want to be an accountant, you want to be an architect, and you want to be anything, doctor, any of those kinds of things, you've got to be trained and qualified, or you're not allowed to be one. We think anyone could be a manager and leader.
And that's the thing. The report does talk about what can be done as well. You know, it's not just all doomsaying. And it talks about how we can go on to improve the quality of the management. So what sort of skills gaps are there? We talk a lot about it, but what are the actual skills?
When I first did my teacher training many moons ago, I remember my leader of my course saying to me, "You've got to learn to scaffold and fade." And I didn't understand what he meant for a while. And then eventually I got it, this idea that your job was to create the environment in which good stuff could happen and then get out of the way. I really struggled with that concept at the time, because I saw my job as being in control, in command, being the center of attention, being the focal point of the team, etc. That I was the commander, the high commander, you know? And that scaffolding and fading felt like a dereliction of duty.
Yeah.
And actually, the sort of skills that we need amongst people are coaching, which is the very essence of that, which is asking questions and not knowing the answer to them, and not giving an answer, but asking more questions, to encourage someone to think things through, to grow their understanding. Things like, at this stage, he used the word nurturing because people attach all kinds of other connotations. But that is what we're talking about. If you're going to create a talented, innovative organization, it has to be nurtured. You have to encourage it. So the skill of nurturing and developing people is hugely significant in all of this.
And that's a culture and environment kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Leaders and managers create the culture and the environment, whether they think they do or not. They do, because everybody looks to them. And actually today, the best leaders are probably more likely to be the ones that ask questions rather than the ones that give orders.
And as you say, the impact of having a truly effective manager is can be massive. Some of the stats that they come out with, they talk about workers with an ineffective manager versus workers with an effective manager. So 47% of workers with an ineffective manager think their work is meaningful versus 74%. And the other one that I thought was quite interesting was I would recommend my organization as a good place to work, 21% versus 68%. I mean, that's a massive gap.
That's a huge difference. So more than three times as many who had an effective manager, because they see that manager as the embodiment of what the organization is like.
Mm.
If you're working for a narcissistic bully, why would you want someone else to suffer the same fate unless you hated them?
Yeah.
Or you were already leaving and thought it wasn't your problem anymore.
Mm.
The lifespan of people in organizations has shortened and shortened and shortened even before COVID. But yeah, it's true, isn't it? There's such an enormous difference. Like, take the one that says, I am satisfied with my current job. 27% of people who have an ineffective manager and 74% of the ones with an effective one.
Mm.
So you can see immediately, I feel motivated to do a good job, 34 versus 77.
Yeah.
That right there is the productivity gap.
Yeah.
Right there. You know, if you're not motivated to do a good job, then what's going to make you bother?
Mm.
Easy peasy.
Yeah, and so, as we said at the start as well, it's not necessarily always the managers are doing it wrong, as opposed to they just don't have the skills or the enthusiasm for the role to begin with. Yeah. But it's the only way, as you said, that they can get on, they can make more money and progress.
Yeah, I mean, you think back to in your life when you were 25, your particular needs were for a certain type of amount of money because you had a particular lifestyle support.
Yeah.
Yeah. As you get older and you've got kids and you want to move to an area with a good school and this kind of stuff, suddenly your baseline shifts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Smart sectors have worked it out. So, in education, they've worked it out. They've created this role called advanced practitioner, or they might call it something else now, where the best teachers can progress without having to go into a line management job.
Mm.
Progress by developing and coaching and mentoring other teachers to be as good as they are. And that's how they earn their money. We have to find ways of helping people to understand that actually being a leader is one of the greatest jobs you can possibly have if you're doing it properly. You get to improve people's lives and create breakthroughs and create innovation and support people in being their best selves. You get to all kinds of amazing things that aren't hitting them overhead with a target until they crumble.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, by the way, the evidence suggests that the people that do the first thing of the creating the right culture and empowerment and environment end up with better productivity than the ones who hit people over the head with a set of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
That's the challenge. We need to start taking it seriously as a profession and then teaching people how to do it.
Yeah.
That brings back to the podcast we did ages ago about why leadership should be taught in schools. Because we shape expectations there for young people of what being a leader is about, and they have a very different paradigm in their heads of what they're learning to become.
Mm. I was just thinking about that's probably where it all stems. That's how you do the systemic change, is by teaching children about it as they grow up, by teaching them about how to create environments and how to do management and leadership well, because then not only can they do it, but they expect it as they're working their way up from their leaders and managers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the kind of same solution for a lot of society's ills.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that people need to be taught this stuff. It's the need to stop being taught the other stuff.
Yeah.
As much. Yeah, that's the part of it. The representation is so important, and it's not just representation of, you know, the disabled or particular sexual orientations or color or whatever it might be. We need representation of what good looks like.
Mm.
And if people have great leaders and managers, they will aspire to be like that.
Yeah.
If they have toxic buffoons, but who make lots of money, what kind of a role model are they providing? And what kind of example are they setting?
And it does seem, it just does just seem logical. You know, I suppose there's an element of, you know, an organization in CMI that promotes training managers and training management and training leadership, you know, comes across a report that says that we're struggling with that and that the answer is training managers and leadership. Yeah. And we're talking about, and we as a doing a podcast to, and we as a leadership training company are doing a podcast where we're talking about it. But it does just seem very logical that if you want someone to do a job, train them to do that job.
Yeah.
And train them to be a manager, train them to be a leader, especially because it is doable. It's not something that, you know, as we've talked about in the past, it's not a character trait. It's a series of skills and behaviors.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there is an element here of, well, they would say that, wouldn't they? And we would say that, wouldn't we? But I do think that the logic is sound, and that in any case, it just makes life better.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, we want a better life. And there are lots of pockets of really, really good practice in organizations where you can see the ones that, where the people that get it have been in the right place, make a difference. And you see that happen, you think, wow, why can't it be like this in other places? And some of it's luck and some of it's diligence and determination. What you want is people who have all the soft skills, but are also driven and tough enough to make it happen. That's a rare combination. But it's there, you know, you'd see in the organizations that get this stuff right, what it's like to work there. I remember talking to Johnny Ive before he was Sir Johnny Ive, and like many years ago at a conference about Apple. He was the director of design at Apple. And he was saying that, I said, how do you find so many talented people? He said, we don't, they find us.
Mm-hmm.
So we, at any one time, so we might have 20,000 applications sitting there in our books of people that are really, really good and want to work for us. And I don't think a lot of organizations have grasped that yet. You know, some organizations are struggling to recruit. Well, there's a reason for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't want to work there. So change that, and maybe that would be different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Make yourself the kind of organization that people want to work for.
Yeah.
And I know people are doing that more and more now. They're not just looking for jobs; they're looking at organisations. People I know are sending out just job. They find an organisation that they think, well, that looks good. I'll see if there are any jobs there.
Yeah. Write to them and offer myself, and then when if they got anything about them, they'll find a role for me at some point.
Yeah.
Match me to something. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and then that way I'll get away from my bad manager.
Exactly. So, or I'll stop being it.
Yes.
Yes.
Great. Well, I think we'll leave it there for today, Nigel. Thanks a lot for your time. Hope that people have found some useful input there. And we'll put a note in the we'll put a link in the show notes to the report, so people can download it and read it. Do recommend it. There's a lot of really good stuff in there. And we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Leadership Learn podcast. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the topics and issues discussed today. You can find us on LinkedIn by searching Inspirational Development Group, or email us at info@inspirationaldg.com. If you want to find out more about IDG and the work we do optimising human performance through leadership development, you can visit our website at inspirationaldevelopment.com. We'll see you next time.